Last Sunday, I wrote on the board, to be continued. And you applauded. So in the mouth of two witnesses, the thing is confirmed. I'm going to continue. I want to thank the folks. I want to thank all of my friends in the Dallas-Fort Worth area who called in saying, welcome back. KDFI, Channel 27, Dallas, Texas, every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. I want to thank the Voices of Faith for being there. We welcome the calls from Dallas, but they are joining us. It seems like ever since we left Dallas, I've been in Romans. Now, they're lucky they come back at a time when I'm doing an excursion in faith and preaching some faith messages out of the book of Psalms and other places. I'm into the 170s as I go through the book of Romans, and I just finished the second chapter. I've asked God to let me live till I finish it, so I find every excuse to prolong it. The excursion in faith, all the review you need, is right here. Romans 1:17. The 16th verse before it says, Ugar episkunomai, for I'm not ashamed, to euangelion, of the gospel, the good news. Some of you thought you knew what the word gospel meant. We spent some time on it. It is that wonderful proclamation that God now provides a way that we can do. This perfectionism of do this and don't do that and legalism finds everyone falling short. And that's why Paul uses the Greek word hamartia to define sin, is simply falling short. And if we've learned nothing else through this second chapter, and it will continue into the third, all have sinned, come short, and come short of the glory of God. That happens in human flesh when that wonderful incarnation act occurred, and the word that could tell us all we need to know about God, facing God in eternity, struck a tent in human flesh called Jesus of Nazareth and led forth God's nature onto the stage of history. And He is the only one that didn't fall short, but He took our sin, died in our place, removed that barrier, and the good news of the gospel is there's another kind of righteousness that God now wants. A righteousness, dikaiosune, or a righteousness, not the, as the King James says. God's got many expressions of righteousness, but this new track, dikaiosune, righteousness, for a righteousness of God in it. And if I'd written the 16th verse on the board, that it is the gospel. In this message of the gospel, apokaluptetai, from which we get apocalypse, is really uncovering. And it's in the tense of the verb being. In the gospel, there is in it being revealed. Suddenly let loose. A new way to God, a new path to God, not so new. And the faith goes all the way back to Abraham. But in its place, there's the inevitable tendency to substitute our works. And all the Old Testament faith was provided for in the act of Christ until God now takes people home when their lifestyle is ek pistios, eis piston, from faith. To faith. I've already talked to you. This is to be continued. About the case endings in the Greek, which give us a clue of the relationship between the words. This is genitive here, from faith. And true to the diagram I drawed on the board, the genitive case, if you assume this box is the word, relates to other words out from. It's moving from an origin, a generator, a genesis. It is energy turned loose, being described by that word that moves from, and in this case, we who want this righteousness, from us, from our faith. Accusative is the case here, and those words mean something moves in. I'm here. The genitive faith, I'm sending it out. The accusative happens. Something added comes in. And there's a compounding effect that when we generate faith, God adds His portion, gives us added velocity of faith. Well, now, if that's the case, we need to know what faith is. We spent too much time for this audience who's got it memorized. But faith in the New Testament is this word, pisteo. It's a verb. We translate it to believe, and thereby abort its meaning. Not to believe, that's just part of it. It's action, as I wrote on the board that's been erased, action based upon belief, sustained by confidence. Belief is in there. Confidence involves more than just the belief. Here is action, the mind and belief. Confidence is the emotions, and your will activates. So it involves the will, it involves the mind, and belief, and emotions. That word, still to modern day, I tested all across Greece. The word still means that. It's a total package. You're acting based upon belief, sustained with confidence. Last Sunday, I used the illustration. I'm acting in faith when I walk on this stage. I believe, don't think too much about it because I've experienced it so much. I'm at, to get ahead of the story, I'm at the amen stage on it. I'm amening with my life. So be it. I expect when I step, my foot will not go up there, go here. I believe in gravity. I act accordingly. I have the confidence. I won't be floating in the air as I walk. God grabbed the word, made it His in the New Testament. Pisteo, piston, its various derivatives. And when that action based upon belief is action based upon a belief in a promise of God, and that God's not a man to lie, nor will He take back His word when He says it, He'll do it. That is faith that gets God's attention and causes Him to give us more faith, but more importantly, implant His life in us that does the righteous thing. God takes care of the righteous thing. It's a fruit that grows from the presence and wealth. That's why we use the phrase regeneration. We use the phrase born again. A life comes, which is why my faith had to be settled on the resurrection. Lost my faith in college and university. Got it back from the study of the resurrection. 3.5 hard years. I didn't say, you ask me how I know He lived. He lived within my heart because of some feeling I have. But Christianity is based on an objective fact of history that can be looked at like any other fact of history. But most people argue in a circle. Couldn't happen, therefore it didn't happen, so why bother to look? I looked. And once I closed that last book and said, there's only one answer, He came out of that grave. He ascended, said He's coming back. Now, I understand molecular displacement. We spent a lot of time in the early chapters of Romans on the modern state of science and the certainties of Newtonian physics being broken apart by quantum mechanics and the uncertainty as they've gone well below the atom, which comes from a Greek word which means indivisible, as they've divided and divided and divided. The minute microcosm of this universe and the macrocosm hung together. Faith says, by this very same one who moved into a tent of flesh and took on our likeness to save us, with a spoken word, from nothing, Hebrews says, he spoke and everything was. Period. Became. He didn't say, let there be light. He said, light be. And there it was. Now, once the resurrection crossed that hurdle, I don't have any trouble believing that we serve a God who can keep his promise and put an invisible presence in us, just as he breathed into Adam and Eve, formed out of dust, and said, let us make man in our image, and he breathed into them, and they became a living soul. Molecular displacement to him, he created it. We get an explosion with the energy released. He can pull it apart, put it back together. Once I believe he can go through that door, go through that rock, as my dad says, the stone was rolled away to let people in to see it's gone. He didn't need to roll it away to get out. He went through it. Once I accept that, I have no trouble believing that he has promised, if I will trust him and walk this life of clinging on to his promises, he will put the same life in me that raised up Christ from the dead, the same life so magnified in his case or intensified that it immortalized him in an instant. And if the Shroud of Turin is true, I happen to believe it is, that image was burned in the fibers from that light energy in much more microscopic, though it seems almost blasphemous to use such a amateurish human description of things, he puts in us what Jesus called a paraclete, another person, another comforter. The right hand of the Father raised from the dead in power, the gospel message began, he can dispense his life in us. If we are moving from faith to faith. And yesterday's faith is as dead as a hammer. You plug a cord in over there and the light goes on. You pull the cord out and the light goes off. Hebrews says we remain the house of God if we keep doing what we were doing to get it. We receive Christ by faith. Christ has formed in your heart that life from him by faith. You remain the house of God if you keep faithing. You stop faithing, not yesterday's faith, today's faith. You stop faithing, you've unplugged. And it is always the trick of Satan to substitute works for faith. He'll do the workings as fruit that comes into our nature from the life that is there. And then when we're born again, we become a dual nature. Christ in us, the hope of glory, doing its work to bring forth fruit. Implanted there as an act of grace, undeserving merit, no merit of any kind, given to us from faith to faith. That's the Christian message that periodically gets lost in the history of the church. That's what I've been preaching out of the book of Romans. But I paused at the end of the second chapter to say, okay, now let's learn how to practice it a little better, though this is a seasoned church. Let's learn to practice it by seizing promises that can apply where we live and see if we can walk from faith to faith. What surprised me the most is how I need these messages, maybe worse than you. The more you know about God, the more you can find, you know, it's like an old marriage. The more you learn how to survive and work around And you can be just as self-centered as a Christian as a sinner. A.W. Tozier, and we're all sinners being saved by grace, but you can be just as guilty of self-centeredness in the church pews as out there in the street. Tozier calls it the same business on the other side of the street. We just changed the groups or the gang we work our self-centered ploys on. And God, like He did the Israelites, has to drive us into situations, because this Christian life is a journey that squeezes out of us the necessity to reach for one of His promises, and He finds out, are we trusting? Are we growing in that trusting relationship? Before He dabs a little more on us. From faith, my faith, He's going to test it. Before He dabs a little more on. And then the irony of it is He dabs a little more on, I get stronger in faith. Just around the corner, He's got a bigger test to see if, okay, now, will you go from faith to faith in this one? That's the part I don't like. You see, it's hard to be a Christian if you don't have a breath of eternity on you. Because we want somehow to have the trip retire before heaven. I mean, you know, I look back and He just keeps getting queerer and queerer as He comes up with these new tests. Will I ever cross the final test of faith until I can coast on into eternity? No, 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 1,000 times no, and then eternally no. No! The God of peace shall separate us wholly over there. We are pilgrims, having no permanent abode here, marching to Zion. So I want to tell you, cheer up, saints. It's going to get worse, because that's what God's about. I want to know if I can trust, ever teach these self-centered imps to trust. Now, I died for them. That gives me the grace and measure of grace to keep starting over. But they're not going to change the terms of this relationship. I'm the potter. I've made it possible. They're going to learn to trust me. And home is with Him. And death is a beginning, and we can rest in that Sabbath rest over there. In the meantime, it's not work, work, work to make other Christians happy. It's not please all the saints. It's, are you still trusting? Are you still walking by faith? Or have you settled back and decided, once faith, always faith? A parody on the doctrine of once saved, always saved. You are called to a journey from faith to faith. So I'm now teaching you some promises that you can hang on. And the New Testament word, pisteo, translates three words in the Old Testament. More than that, the three prominent ones. Hasso, which is to run to a shelter. Patok, which is to lean on something. An amen, which is a state of mind. When you lean and it supports you, you gain confidence. When you run to the shelter and it covers you, you gain confidence. Faith needs practice. Faith grows. You start out tentative. Okay, this is the way. I'm in a mess. I got a promise here that fits my mess. I'm going to hang on to it in spite of the circumstances. And God comes through. And then you suddenly find yourself more and more confident. And it usually happens in certain areas of life. I learned to trust God in His provisions of me and taking care of me materially. I crossed that hurdle years ago. I lived with the biographies of great men of faith. They all had to cross that hurdle. So I don't even have to work at this anymore. God will provide for me. I've said, you throw me on a desert island, I believe God will create a market for sand. I have learned it, not always with that faith, through many years of trusting Him in that regard. So I think I'm closer to the amen stage in claiming that name of God, God will provide. I can tell you I'm a lot closer to amen now on the matter of divine healing. The Lord is my healer. I had to have a doctor look at me 2 years ago and tell me I had 11 months to live. Very aggressive, worst form of double 10 Gleason, as bad as it gets, prostate cancer. And if you didn't have surgery and radiation immediately, I'd be dead in 10 to 12 months, 10, 11, 12 months, and a very painful death. I didn't get radiation. I didn't get surgery. Didn't get anything. I went to Isaiah 53, which opens with, "Who He amens the hearing of us." And I lived with it. And my faith rose to an amen level. And on October 5th, 2 years have passed. And I haven't got a slightest sign of prostate cancer. Now, they'll say, this guy, well, don't, I'm in a hurry. Thank you, but I'm in a hurry. Boom. I'm sure the skeptics will say, misdiagnosis. And I told you I don't ever want to meet that wench. Adventist Hospital plus two others. UCLA, Hope, they sent the microscopic biopsy, double 10 Gleason out for confirmation. God heal me. I have amen to that. What I don't have amen level yet is that God can come out of the blue tomorrow and surprise me with something that I know He had nothing to do with and He didn't know it was going to happen. And so how in the world can I say amen that He's going to get me through that when even God couldn't have thought of the mess that I'm now in? I'm being ludicrous, but you ever been there? How many are here today knowing that you're in some kind of mess that God doesn't know? Because and like old Carlyle says, well, if God's up there, He sure as hell ain't doing anything. Then you need this message. I have to have those things happen. I mean, God's kind of running out of options of tests with me. He's used them all up. That's why I say He couldn't even figure this one out. He has to come up with another one. The Bible shows the more mature the saint, the greater the trial. So He has to put you in a squeeze play of circumstance to see. You're going to wail and whine, rebel and murmur, or are you going to say, opportunity, I'm going to move through this from faith to faith. And I've been leading you through promises that you can then apply. Here's where we were last Sunday. Psalm 91. Yosheb in the Hebrew. Yosheb, what does that mean? I've written the one dwelling, because it's a participle in the Hebrew. Vesetir. What's that mean? Yosheb Vesetir. Alyon. Sounds like a name of God. Betzal, Shaddai, Yitlonam. What does that mean? King James, you've got it memorized, a lot of you. Go to Psalm 91. See what it says. Come on. I'm not going to hurry today, because if I don't finish, I can write to be continued on the board. I learned a new secret. Psalm 91, the King James. Read it to you last Sunday, but I'm sure you forgot. He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. What in the world does that mean? He? How many have it memorized? Oh, a few. He that dwelleth, that's the first word here. They take three words in the English. He that dwelleth. In the secret place. Oh boy, I remember I was doing last Sunday on that. That immediately, I mean, that becomes very attractive. That means there's some place out there. There's some spiritual place. It's a secret. I mean, I should have exploited this when I'm dealing with secret 15. People like to. They're like the guy that was, long before these current people were knocking people down. Lauren Fox, who was healed under Dr. Charles Price's ministry, took up the torch to Catherine Kuhlman and every generation. And I've often said, I want to be picked up by God. A teacher's own. Lauren Fox was holding a meeting for my dad in his church in Oroville. And he'd always say, I want to prepare you now. This phenomenon follows our ministry around. Those days there was no TV, so he had to prepare them. Now, everybody prepared by TV. They already know it's going to happen. But Lauren Fox, he had to prepare the congregation. I want you to be too shocked, because this phenomenon follows my ministry. That when I pray for the sick, they, many times and usually, are knocked down with the power of the Spirit. And he had a muscled-up weightlifter, Ketchin, and Willard Cantillon, who is familiar to this congregation from years ago. Willie Cantillon was with him. Willie said to me, Gene, Cecil, he just catches him like a feather. They prefer Cecil standing behind him. Because when I catch him, I just let him go. Because I figure if it's God, it won't hurt him. If it isn't, they need a good thump. That's Willie Cantillon speaking. And one guy marched through the line about every night. He goes down every night. And the fourth night, my dad said to him, sir, dad was pastor, haven't I seen you here before? Oh, yes, Pastor Scott, but the treatments are doing me good. There's too much of a tendency in the church world to put these distances between me and you, the spiritual giants, and you peons for God. Come and see me preach in my sackcloth suit. I'm in the secret place. I walk on a plane different than others. You can even tell when the Spirit's moving, I get, stained glass tones. It was used in the Middle Ages to put the distance with a language the people didn't understand. Only recently, in the long history of the Catholic Church, have they allowed the mass and the services to be conducted in a language that people understand. It's as old as the oracles. It's this whoo 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 whoo. People are hunting that secret place. The one dwelling in the secret place of who? You should have memorized it. Secret place of who? The Most High. Right? That's not bad. Now, I read to you from some other translations. This is obviously not an easy verse to translate. And if you don't know what it means and you're only going to put your own meaning on it, how in the world are you going to expect God to respond to your faith and add His faith or add to your faith from Him if you are claiming a promise that isn't even close to what He promised? Like the old philosopher said, if you're going to discuss or converse with me, define your terms. Getting a right translation is not that difficult if somebody wants to pay the price. And most translations in the modern world are very dangerous because they have some a priori theological axe they're trying to grind. Look at the differences here. The Psalms in the Book of Common Prayer of the Anglican Church, I read this last Sunday quickly. Whoso dwelleth under the defense of the Most High. Defense. That reminds me of the story in college. The test was to put a sentence together quickly using four words. Decal, defense, defeat, and detail. One bright guy got it quickly. The cow jumped over defense, defeat before detail. The point being, words that come out of someone's mouth do not always enter the head with the same meaning. That's why I'm going to pull this out. I know what promises. I've told you this Psalm 91 is a three-voice drama. There's a first voice that is this first verse that is making a statement that is God's promise. The second verse is the psalmist who takes our place and responds. And with that response behind in the second verse, clear down to the 14th verse with one possible interruption by the psalmist in the 9th verse. These first voices, the angels in the drama, as I put it, there's the psalmist, the angels who are watching and talking, and then there's God. And the angels are the declarant of the psalm. Makes the statement of the promise, first verse. The psalmist, taking our place, responds, second verse. The angels go on with the promise. 9th verse, possibly, the psalmist can't contain himself and he interjects another response. The angels keep talking down to the 14th verse, and then God speaks. And what God had to say, I've already written on the board. Over here, the 14th verse, which we'll get to. But I'm going back to tear apart and unpack the words of this promise so that we can understand what the psalmist understood when he heard the promise and gave such a wonderful response. What does this mean? Defense. Defense. That's just the Anglican prayer book. I'm reading this slowly because I want you to see there's a lot of confusion. They're all good, but different interpretations. Septuagint, he that dwelleth under the protection of the Most High. I will challenge that as I'll show you the Septuagint in a minute, because the words are translating protection. has a much richer meaning out of the Septuagint, which is the translation of the Old Testament into Greek, 3rd to 1st century BC, because the word is boithai. Boithia from the verb boitheo, which describes what they do in the emergency room and the television series ER. It is a word that means not just help, not just protection, but it describes that state of mind undergirding the act of running to protect, like a mother bird will do, or like God is promising to do, if that's the interpretation of this word. It's more than protection, it's running to the need or to the one that's being oppressed. And that's what the Septuagint has. So protection hardly says it, though, if you undergird it with the running to protect, that's the right translation. He who lives in the secret shelter of the Most High, Berkeley. Well, we got secret in there again. He who lives as a ward of the Most High, Harrison's special study on Psalms. Amplified, who dwells in the secret place. He who dwells under the shelter of the Most High. You can see there's a lot of different ways to translate it. So will you bear with me while I pull it apart? Let's try a couple others so you know there's a lot of difference of opinion. Let's take the Spanish version. We've got all kinds of people here who speak Spanish. El que habita al abrigo del Altísimo, moraja bajo la sombra del Omnipotente. Now that's close. El que, he that, habita, lives al abrigo del, al abrigo de is a colloquial expression, is under the protection of, or sheltered from, or protected under the protection of, or shielded of, or shielded by, rather. So he that lives under the protection of Altissimo, the Most High, morar, the verb to dwell in the future tense, will dwell, bajo, under or below la sombra, I think that's shadow or shade, is that right? Shadow. Under the shadow del Omnipotente, under the shadow of the Omnipotent, the Almighty. The Most High and the Almighty are here. But you notice they put the second sentence and the verb in the future. He that dwells under the protection of the Most High will dwell under the shadow of the Omnipotent. So they're trying to twist this verse that it's a condition precedent. If you dwell under the, or if you live under the protection of the Most High, then you will, future, continue to be dwelling in the shadow of the Almighty. Sorry, that doesn't get it. Am I boring you? Maybe it'll be continued next Sunday after I get you curious enough. You know, most people think you park your brain at the door of a church. Everybody's born an expert in religion, just like politics. You don't have to study or think. You're supposed to come and get a feel-good 20-minute massage from God's spokesman and go home and live like hell the rest of the week. Because you're going to get a new dose next Sunday. I make you work, don't I? Let's look at the Vulgate. How many know that this Bible dominated the Middle Ages for centuries? It's called Jerome's Vulgate. We got one handwritten down there. We've got the room of the book, all these foundations of our Bible on display. We got the only one in the world of a handwritten copy down in the room of the book in the center hexagon where the leaves of the Gutenberg are, where the first Greek Bible ever printed is. But not everybody knows the Vulgate went through changes. Went through changes. Now this, I've talked to you about the Nettle Allen New Testament Greek, which is the composite of all the modern scholarship on the Greek New Testament. This Vulgate edition is the standard equivalent of that Nettle Allen book on the Vulgate, Biblia Sacra. Here it is. The only difference is that unlike the Greek, can you get it? Unlike the Greek that has English translation with it, this one only has the Latin. So unless you can read it or work a Latin dictionary real well, it won't work. But I want to show you something. The Psalms is very interesting. Get ready to pick this up again with that camera. Did you pick it up adequately then? Could you see it? Okay, I want to show you something. You see, Jerome, at the end of the latter half of the 4th century, about 30, 40, 50 years after the three oldest Bibles in the world were produced, which are downstairs, the Sinaiticus, the Vaticanus, and the Alexandrinus, some of the rare copies of it. There's only one of each, but rare copies were made for libraries. And this Vulgate, we have on the other side down there where those rare copies are, we have polyglots, which are multiple versions side by side, including one of the most rare of the world, the London polyglot. You can figure out in this message, I'm trying to let you know you ought to come to the cathedral, because there are things to see here. But you can get in as long as you understand you're coming to a university-level classroom and you come respectfully. I mean, last Sunday, some stranger came in and was noted taking a $20 bill out of the offering plate and putting it under her thigh. And when confronted, she said yes, but she said she comes from the Baptist tradition where you're allowed to make change from the offering plate. We had offering plates. You can see the hands that put it in and take it out. We have deep bags. No. You don't do that here. We don't raise money for projects. We don't talk about giving. We don't threaten you. I say don't give any money until I first teach you and then give what you think it's worth. The people applaud when I take up an offering here. But no. We have house rules, and when in doubt, ask. But I want to show you something. The last half of the 4th century, Jerome first translated the Psalms from the Septuagint Greek. Then he fell in love with Hebrew and made it a task to learn it. And he used Origen's 2nd century hexapla that had 8 different versions side by side to translate the Psalms from the Hebrew. So in this Hebrew or this Latin Bible, you'll notice, if you can pick it up, 2 sides. On the left is Jerome's first translation from the Septuagint, and on the right, as the pages go through the Psalms, is his 2nd translation of the Psalms from the Hebrew. So, and Jerome did not do all the Bible. Others did it. There were revisers and others. But this was his first work, and he really plowed into the book of Psalms. Just see what he did, because it got 2 translations from the Latin. From the Septuagint he translated, Qui habitat in adiutorio altissimi. He who lives... Adiutorio is the help. He who lives in the help of the Most High. Obviously, that's translated from the Septuagint, because they use the word which is to run to the help, which I just talked about, which is that Greek word, boethia. What did he do when he went to the Hebrew? Different translation. Kiavitat, same thing there, in absconditō. That's concealment, secret, in hiding. Excelsi, which is eminence, lofty, high. Not the same word as altissimi, but it's high, lofty being. Most high comes close to it, but the word alion, I'll get to that in a minute. We did that last Sunday. In umbraculo domini comorabitur, which is in the shade of the Lord, lingering, make a stay or remain or spend the night. So in both cases, they are essentially saying, he who lives, one of his translations, in the help of the Most High, the other one, one who lives concealed or in a secret place of the Most High, or not the Most High, but the eminence, lofty, elevated one, in the protection in one case, in protectione de Caeli, the God of heaven, but then they come back to the same word, comorabitur, which is to sustain oneself or stay or linger in the place. Says to the Lord, hope of me, strength of me, God of me, I have complete trust in thee. That's pretty good. So he translated from the Septuagint, from the Latin. Am I boring you? Doesn't mean any one of these things. That's why it's so hard to translate. It embraces just about all of them, which is why I'm beating you to death with it. This word is a participle that involves dwelling, but it's more than just one who dwells. That's describing the state of getting there and staying there once you get there. The one who dwells... Can I do this with you?
Yes, sir.
One who dwells, one do this last Sunday and didn't. From this marvelous study, the Theological Dictionary of the Old Testament pages. Listen closely, because we're trying to figure out what did God say through his inspired writer, the psalmist. What did he say? We'll start with that first verb. The participle, yoshev. The base that lies behind the West Semitic root, yoshev, is morphologically an expansion, listen close, of the two-syllable root by the addition of the prefix root that's in front of it. So most of the verbs are three consonants, but this one is a combination of two roots. That's what that's saying. The meaning lies in the realm, the reason there's two roots, lies in the realm of a change of location or placement. There'll be some change occur. Movement. Especially in the case of persons, shift to a lasting or even permanent state is in the foreground. The group of meanings grouped into several sections, but it's a change of placement, residence, living somewhere, settled. And one of the two basic roots, in addition to the change of placement root, is the broad meaning of to sit, which is why it's used of a king that is elevated and sits enthroned. It's used as the root for Abraham moving to sit at the entrance of his tent. It embraces a concept of moving to a place of rest. One who is disturbed, under attack, confronted with a problem killing you, is going to move to a place of rest. I used that as an illustration last Sunday when I was in that terrible plane flight. My spirit had to move from this cavity of fear to an identity with the promise. And how do you move anywhere into God's promises? I've said this at the end of each of the last three messages. In the New Testament, you don't have to go through some special liturgical gyration. With the heart man believes, with the mouth proclamation is made. God has determined to bless us, as Ephesians 1 says, through words, culminating in the living Word, who moved into a tent of human flesh and told us all we need to know about God. He wants us to relate to Him with words. It's primarily a personal relationship. We must understand we don't have to go up where God is and bring Him down, or descend and bring Him up. The medium is already nigh us. It's in our mouth. Speak it forth. With the heart man believeth, with the mouth proclamation is made. There is a place. It isn't some secret woo, 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 woo. It's a place where, I haven't got to the second word. It's a place where we can be. Now we have a relationship between the words. That dwelling place is in this second word. I've written from last Sunday in Him, but that's head of the story for today. We have the capacity with our words to say to God, in whatever circumstance I'm in, I am determined to be dwelling where? That's a tear. Well, now, what in the world is that? And that's what's translated secret place, translated protection, translated making you a ward, translated a multiple number of things. Let's look at this word. Am I boring you? This is what the Latin Vulgate called auditorio. And in the Hebrew translation, absconditio, is what the Septuagint calls boithia. And the Spanish called under the protection of, to translate it, al abrigo de. What's that word mean? Vestitio is what it was in the original. What's it mean? I care, but I need it. I don't know whether you care or not. Satire, cheater, cheetra, with a noun, form in front of it, mister, master, mister. What's the word mean? Well, from early Semitic languages, it's alternately different words that mean a veil, an apron. Old South Arabic, to protect. Jewish Aramaic, to hide. And the fundamental meaning of hide seemed to remain consistent across the spectrum. And modifications such as protect and cover are all in the roots. But the meaning of hide is to be understood in the sense of being removed or withdrawing or taking flight or protect or cover. The context has to give it to you. And in the construct here, where we have the genitive working, it's out from right here. This place is out from, and one, the verb is dwelling, in some place that is out from or generated by this third word. You can dwell in that place. You get there by words, but you've got to be able to articulate what it is you are claiming as a promise from God. Let's go on with this cedar. You with me? It always involves a personal relationship. The subject's always a person. It can mean hiding place, refuge, security, shelter, covering. Undercover. Hiding place. And finally, in the tracing of the words, Yahweh Himself is understood to be a cedar, a refuge, a shelter, a place of security. My refuge, my fortress, my God, in whom I trust, He's going to say later. So, what is this cedar? It's some place provided and flowing from the Most High. All alone. Notice, as I said last Sunday, a different consonant than Eloha. Aleph here, Ayin, Al Yon. It comes from this prefix, which means to go up, to ascend, to be on high, and it is in all of its forms a way of saying, much like the name of God, Jehovah, Yahweh, Sabaoth, He is Lord above all. He has everything at His disposal. Everything at His disposal. What this verse is saying is there is a dwelling place and a position that we can have dwelling in what is translated in the King James a secret place, but it's a state of being protected, covered over, and what has not been obvious as I sought to confuse you with all these different translations is that it would take a page to translate it. And what each of these translators are doing, and it's tragic that they clouded so much with the mystical, mysterious word, secret, because what is being said, He is everything. Everything that you need, He is to cover you. But we have not because we ask not. The covering doesn't have to be in some secret place. The covering came on the plane when I was flying. The covering can be right there in the seat as you listen to me. We have the promise of an invisible presence. I will never leave you nor forsake you. We have preached through all these verses. Blessed is the man who goes through the valley of weeping, because blessed is the man whose strength is in thee. We preached through Psalm 46, the verse that's written up here this morning. This verb, or rather, this noun, strength, ooze, an inner presence of God that puts iron in the soul, as it said of Joseph, God kept him in irons until the iron entered his soul, until he could be tough enough to do what God called him to do. Uzrah. What this word expanded from these two roots is surrounding strength. Blessed is the man whose strength is in thee, whose inside you he puts his nature. But he surrounds you with his strength. Surrounding strength. Betzerot, in be trouble, Nimsah, presenting himself, narrowed, excessively. The promise of Psalm 46 is he stands ready to excessively present himself in trouble to surround with his strength. Invisible presence is always there. Waiting the acting and the amen state, I really believe this is my promise. I can grab it. Am I doing it all the time? No. I got The last two Sundays, I think I've gotten attacked more on Saturday and Saturday night to shake my belief that what these promises say can be mine. Forever, O Lord, thy word settled in heaven. This promise tells me you can become a dweller. You can be characterized as the one dwelling in a sheltered place, a protection, a covering, a surrounding strength that is from the Most High. You need all these words to describe it. So I go back to the problem they're facing is English translators. One of the words in one of the translations is secret. Etymologically, something that is secret is separated from others. Hence, put out of the way, hidden. The word comes by Old French secret from Latin secretus. An adjectival use of the past participle of cecinere, to separate. The compound verb formed from a prefix, set apart, and cinere, separate. From the 16th to the 18th centuries, secret was used as a verb meaning to hide. That's why the King James people used it. But it's taken on different meanings now. We're not going to be, you cannot, he may choose to do that. But this promise does not guarantee you will be taken out of your circumstance. Any more than Psalm 84 promises you won't have the valley of weeping. You're going to go through it. That's what the promise is. You will go through the valley of weeping. To be continued, and I keep going, but I ain't done yet here. Just, the camera can go on that to be continued. I'm going on. Let's get some other words. I'm boring you? If you take the 16th and 17th century meaning of secret to hide, okay. But if you're going to incorporate, you're going to pull you out of, out of your situation and hide you somewhere else to where all you sinners out there live in misery. I'm going to fly over here. Wrong word. If that's what you mean by it. What else we got here? Deliver. To deliver is etymologically to set it free. The word comes by Old French deliverer, from late Latin deliverare, a compound verb. Formed from the intensive prefix, de, which means off, down, or away, and the Latin liberare, to set free. Again, a little too much. If you mean you are going to be instantly lifted out of your problem. No, to deliver is an underlying meaning that he will set you free as you trust him. He has the power to change every circumstance, but that's not what this word is really saying. Let's go to some more as we eliminate the options. Help. Today, help is essentially a Germanic word, related forms, German, Dutch, Swedish, Danish. But there's one clue, Lithuanian, shelpti, which is help and support. Better to go to the Septuagint word in the Greek, which I've already given to you, which means to run to the situation to provide help and support. That's what is being promised here. Help and support are within the toolbox of the Most High. And this promise in Psalm 46 says, wherever the trouble is, excessively going to bring an overloaded toolbox and move in on the trouble to surround you with his strength. You are moving into a place that is his target zone for those that he wants to help, which is why that translation says, We who commit our way to Him, as Psalm 37 said, become His ward. He takes that trusteeship on. We are His ward. Now, I reminded God of that several times last night. Like any brat that doesn't think the parents know what they're doing. We took the promise, cast your anxieties literally on Him. You know what's so hard about preaching this? I ain't doing it often enough. It may be harder than you think to preach and realize, right here's the best and worst target. But I know the truth of what I preach. And because I keep preaching it, I'm a little better today. Because somewhere I found the ability, day by day, to get here by doing this. I probably have quoted these verses more. I'll guarantee you I've quoted these verses as much as anybody in this congregation over the last few weeks. As we near the deadline on December 31st. And on all sides I confront so much lack of faith that would let the devil win over 40, 50 people, 30, 40 people that obviously are not hearing with ears of faith and can't realize this is how you end up dwelling in this place. Faithing, trusting. There is in Him the capacity to deliver. There is in Him the concern and care. You're His ward. There is in Him that capacity to massively move onto the scene of trouble. But it's only to those that are trusting Him. And how do you express that trust with a heart man believeth? With the mouth you say it. You talk to yourself and you talk to Him. And that's why I memorize verses. So I can, I don't really think this is true, but I sort of remind myself sometime the little lady that studied Hebrew so she could talk to the Lord in His own language when she got up there. I'm sure He talks every language. But I want to know, since He chose to inspire through these languages, what He actually was saying. Go to some more words. Hide. English has two words, hide. That's to put in a shelter and cover and skin. But they come from the same root because skin's hiding a lot of unpleasant stuff. It's still a covering and a hiding. Let's keep going. Protect. You learn a lot about English. Listen, the tect element of protect goes back to the past participle of Latin tegere, which is to cover, and toga, which covers. Togas, covered, and related to thatch, which is a thatch roof that covers. Combination with the prefix pro, which is in front, produce protegere. Cover in front, protect. So this is saying if we use that word, and it's embraced by Vesetir, he comes in front and surrounds. Over here the verb is, he comes and surrounds with strength. Well, the noun surrounding strength. He covers. He comes pro in front of whatever it is. And speak, you can speak poetically here. He knows the problem, waiting for us to roll it onto Him with words, waiting for us to ask Him. You say, well, I'm hoarse from asking. Try it again. There's only one way. Faith, out of the heart man believes, with the mouth confession is made. Actually, proclamation. In Him. My Bible tells me we get to the 8th chapter of Romans. When we're faithing, He puts Himself in us, that deposit of the Spirit. And when He's in us, we're in Him. And as I said on that plane, humorously, God, once I was moving up in faith, if I go down, He goes down. Because He's in me. That's faith. All of these things. That's why detect uses the prefix which removes. And you're suddenly exposed. Out of. Protect. Let's find some more. Refuge. Etymologically, a place one flees to in order to get away from danger. The compound verb formed from the prefix re, away, and fugere, flee, from which we get fugitive. It's a refuge. Really, that's not the right word here. There's a different word used in Joshua for the cities of refuge. We're not fleeing, that's back to that secret place. We're not fleeing to some place to get out of our problems. We're calling on the name of the Lord. He's more than a match for our problems. We're calling on the name of the Lord, His strength in us, His strength to surround us. In Him we are, if we're acting in faith, and the Most High has got a toolkit to shelter, to cover, to strengthen, to enable, to take care of His ward, which I am, and I'm safe. Like save. Salvage and salvation come from the Latin salvus, uninjured. Uninjured. Invisible strong box begins to form around me. An invisible safe. And when He slams that invisible door with all of these promises, He doesn't give the devil the combination. I'm safe. Secure. Something that is secure is etymologically carefree. Carefree. The prefix said without and cure a care. Without a care. And shelter descended from the Old English shield from a compound form from shield and truma, troop. We're a shielded troop. All of those things are what is meant by living Besatir in Him, in that which flows from Him, in that which we claim from Him, in that which the Most High stands ready and willing to give to those that place their trust in Him. Small wonder that the psalmist comes back and says, I will say to Yahweh, all of these wonderful statements, my shelter, my fortress, my God, I will trust in Him. And what is this verse saying to the one that calls upon the Most High and receives from Him that which it takes all these words to say? He is an endless supply of that which can give you shalom and well-being in whatever your circumstance. That one dwells also in the shadow of Shaddai, the mother image, who would never, talk about a ward, a mother truly treats her babe as her ward, supplying all the nourishment and all the care. This person will. Yit lonan. If I went to these other translations, it has everything from the courtyard of enclosed area of the house of the master to just a place of rest. He rests Himself. One translation would have it, He stays the night. He stays through the night. the night that brings its darkness. He's in the sheltered place of the Most High. And that sheltered place is where He is. The paradoxical reality is, as God moves all this in on us, to us, to surround us in the very trouble we're in. And we, having gone to the book and come to a point where faith rises, that's my promise. Rest yourself. Stay the night. Because God will do what He said. Why should I feel discouraged? And why? I had to find the key for him. Should the shadows come, why should my heart be lonely? You're going to see? That's what I hit. Come up here, baby. Why should I be discouraged? And why should the shadows come? Why should my heart be lonely and long for heaven and home?
When Jesus is my portion, my constant friend is He.
For His eye is on the sparrow,
and I know He watches me.
For His eye the sparrow,
and I know He watches us.
And I know He comes to surround us with His strength. And I know He runs like an ER room to provide help. I know that He will be all of these things. That's what this song is now saying, to put a PS on the message. Why should I feel discouraged? Why should the shadows, except His, come? Why should my heart be lonely when I got the Most High's company and her, and long for heaven and home? He brings home to me. He brings home right here.
When Jesus is my portion, my constant friend is He.
For His eye is on the sparrow,
and I know He watches me.
For His eye is on the sparrow, we sing. I sing because I'm happy. His eye is on the sparrow. That's what Jesus said. He sees the sparrow fall. He knows the hairs of your head. He's got the highest view, the most high, ready to massively bring his toolkit, more than he needs, to trouble, presenting himself massively in your trouble, to surround you with his strength. His eye is on you, but we have not because we ask not. We have not because we're not recognizing he wants to see. Will you trust him? Talk yourself into it. Talk yourself. What time I'm afraid I will trust in the Lord is a talking exercise. His eye is on the sparrow. Let's do it again.
I sing
because
I'm
happy.
I sing because I'm happy.
I sing
because I'm free.
His eye
is on
you.
The sparrow.
And I know
he watches
you. Offering time.